There should be entire psychological faculties devoted to studying why so many Americans are bigoted against the atheist among us. Even as professed non-believers grow in number, almost none hold prominent public office, and concern for the protection of secular values is woefully rare in our public rhetoric. Generously, American Atheists, the organization, is not so exclusionary. A far-ranging new study of religious equality across the 50 states has just been released, and it articulates concerns for the rights of everybody. To overview this masterful work, I'm grateful to be joined by American Atheist Vice President for Legal and Policy Issues, Allison Gill. Allison, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
How did this project come about, and how many areas of focus did you score each state on?
Sure. Well, this is actually the third iteration of this report. We've been putting it out for the last couple years. And the reason that we created this report is because we feel like there's not enough attention paid to issues in the states around church-state separation. Most people don't have a good understanding about what the laws look like in that area and what's been happening in terms of encroaching religious exemptions that undermine the separation of religion and government. And so that's why we created the report, to give both lawmakers and advocates an idea about what their state's laws look like, and to give them a roadmap if they want to improve them and ensure that everybody has religious freedom and not just a select few.
Is there a ranking that was generated for this, or would that be too simplistic a way to summarize such a complicated set of data?
Sure, it's not exactly a ranking. We sorted the states into three categories, either strong protections for religious equality, basic separation, or if they are prone to religious exemptions that undermine religious freedom. So because it's difficult, you know, to sort of say that this state's RFRA is that more better or worse than that state's religious exemptions in foster care. It's difficult to sort of make those assessments. Instead, it's we find it more useful to group them.
Would you highlight one or two findings that you think are particularly significant, either what was true for a surprising number of states or for surprisingly few?
Sure. Well, one really important area that we added this year was an analysis of homeschooling laws, particularly now, given the pandemic, and so many people are either educating their children from home, either through public schools, or many have chosen to use sort of alternate schooling methods because of, you know, what's happening. I think the vast majority of parents are not aware of the just lacking framework of homeschooling laws and protections throughout our country. For years, this area has been really dominated by religious groups, sort of, especially a particular religious sects that sort of encourage and, you know, control homeschooling laws. And so for most states, there's just no restrictions at all. There's no qualifications regarding what has to be taught. There's no sort of prevention of child abuse. And there's been studies that show that homeschooling can be used, unfortunately, in some cases to really mask child abuse. A lot of times when children are withdrawn from public school systems, it's after there's been reports about child abuse or other types of similar activity in the home. And that way there's less scrutiny outside the home of the child. But most states have zero protections in that area. And many states have religious exemptions that say, you know, what limited protections exist cannot be examined if there's a religious exemption to that. So that's one area I think is really important right now.
Do you think most citizens spend much time thinking about these issues, or do they really only get considered when they impact an individual or a family?
I think that's right. Most people don't spend a lot of time thinking about the issues. However, I believe that most people understand that separation of religion and government is important, and that is an issue that's supposed to be respected in our Constitution and in our lives. Because when we see drastic violations of it, when we see the government, you know, give money to churches for religious uses, for example, we just see comments all the time from average people saying things like, well, what about the separation of religion and government? So they expect that it exists and they want it to be enforced, but they don't have a good understanding of what's happening in that area. And so I'm hoping this is a good first step to give at least advocates an idea. But I really think like we need more public discussion and we need media to look at these issues more so and to have a real narrative about the relationship between, you know, religious organizations and the government.
I'd like for you, if you would, to highlight a few more of the findings in this very comprehensive report.
So we did find that about 21 states fell into the category that has religious exemptions that undermine equality. So that has more states and territories than the other two categories, you know, which I think goes to show the state of how a separation of religion and government is really looking in our country at the moment, unfortunately. So I think that's pretty substantive and worth noting. The other area I think that we've been investigating, that's two areas that's really rampant and important to note, is the release time issue. So release time is a fairly old concept. It means basically that schools are free to release a child on the request of the parent to attend religious education during the school day. Now, courts that have looked at this issue said that it has to be done off campus and that the school cannot sort of facilitate what's happening. So that sort of preserves the separation of religion and government. However, we saw more and more states are moving towards allowing public school credit for this type of religious education. So it's being recognized as academic credit by the public schools. And then this past year in Tennessee, we saw the most sweeping release time bill ever that basically requires every school district to allow up to 1 hour per day for release time at the request of the parents, which is incredibly disruptive and really impossible to administer for school districts. Now, we haven't seen much impact from this yet because of the pandemic, but in the future, it's really concerning. And I'm worried that we're going to see these types of things move to other places. And that's one of the benefits of this report. When we see these things come up in some states, we learn, you know, what the advocates are doing, and there's a history of trying to move issues and bills from one state to another in order to advance, you know, efforts to undermine the separation of religion and government.
How can citizen activists as well as groups use this data in their work?
Sure. I think it's helpful to look at individual state scorecards to both understand what the state of the law is in your area, and also we try to provide a comprehensive breakdown of all the relevant issues that are impacted here and how they relate to the separation of religion and government and religious freedom. So I think there might not be, you know, not all people and advocates have a good idea about how all these issues are related or what issues might be considered tangential or related to the separation of religion and government. But by taking a look at this issue, these scorecards, they can see, you know, all these different issues that are available to be worked on and sort of get an idea about how to proceed. I usually describe this as a roadmap. You can see where the law is currently and think about what types of activities you might want to undertake and what types of bills you might want to advocate for to change a law in your state.
Is this something that American Atheists will be tracking going forward?
Yes, we release an annual version of this report. So we're going to, you know, we engage in a lot of state level advocacy. It's one of our primary activities. So we not only track all the bills related to this area throughout the year and encourage advocates in those states to get involved, but then we'll produce a new version of this report at the beginning of next year, which will sort of update what's been happening over the past year. You can look at all the bills that we're tracking on our website. We have a state legislation tracker, www.atheist.org, and there's a one of the headers. You can find the state legislation tracker. I'd also point out that part of this effort is meant to counteract Project Blitz, which is an effort by Christian nationalists to really flood state legislatures with legislation that undermines the separation of religion and government, LGBTQ equality, and reproductive access. And so we also track legislation through a website that's meant to sort of watch Project Blitz and counteract its activities. And I believe the Interfaith Alliance is actually a co-sponsor of that effort. We have numerous different organizations that support that effort, and that's blitzwatch.org is the name of that effort.
Allison, you all have another vitally important report up that I want to highlight for our listeners. You've conducted the largest survey in history of non-religious Americans. Could you just give us some of the top line findings from that?
As part of this project, we put out this national survey, and we found, nearly 34,000 people participated in the survey, non-religious people identifying with different labels participated in the survey. When we found, first of all, I think that shows a real interest in this population for having their voices heard. We actually, at the end of the survey, had a few open-ended questions to sort of allow people to talk about their own experiences. And about one third of participants included their own stories in those sections, which is sort of unheard of in this type of survey. Usually you get about 5% of people taking the extra time to talk about like their story. It really shows, I think, that many non-religious people feel invisible in our country, especially given, the sort of dominance of, especially conservative Christian narratives. So I think that's one issue. The top line most important thing I saw in the report was how non-religious people are treated so differently in areas that are very religious versus less religious areas of the country. And so we looked at things like discrimination and stigma and concealment of one's non-religious beliefs. And all of those things were markedly higher in areas that were very religious. So communities that participants said were very religious, which are mostly concentrated in the South and the Mountain West, like Utah and Idaho. For example, in education, we found a rate of discrimination where people said they faced negative events because of their non-religious beliefs. So it was about three times higher, nearly 42%, over 42%. So nearly half of non-religious people responding said that they faced some type of education discrimination in very religious communities, compared to only about 15% in less religious communities. So it's quite a marked difference. And that's for each of the categories we looked at.
Overall, is it a positive or negative picture the findings of this survey paint?
It's hard to paint it as positive or negative because the fact is we just don't know a lot previously about non-religious communities. They're not included in any government surveys, and that's generally how we learn in this country about the health and education and well-being of our population in different subgroups is through national surveys. But there's none of them that collect data on religion. And so we just did not have any information. So this is meant to be more of a baseline, like to find out more about ourselves, about non-religious people and the issues they face. And, the fact is there's many places where they face serious and significant discrimination and other places where it's markedly less so, like, in more less religious areas of the country. I grew up in New Jersey and live in D.C. Religion has never been an issue for me. Like, it's never been that sort of religiously oppressive. But we hear from our constituents in places like Mississippi that it's a completely different situation. And I think it's important for everyone to understand that.
Generally, as you look at religion in America, as you're doing, and you think about the genuine meaning of religious freedom, do you see something positive or something that is fading and needs much attention?
Sure. I think the general narrative around religious freedom these days is so far off track that it's harmful and damaging. Religious freedom means freedom for everyone to follow their beliefs and, you know, not have them dominated by the state. And yet it's come to mean specific particular privileges for certain religious groups. And that, in fact, is the exact opposite of religious freedom. It's undermining religious freedom. And I really think we need to get back to a narrative, based on the historical principle that were encoded in our Constitution, that, you know, religious freedom is for everyone, religious, non-religious, and of every individual faith, that no one should get special treatment or favorable or disfavorable because of their beliefs. That's really critical. And I hope we can sort of change that narrative back to what we understand in this country as a historical, you know, really it's one of the foundational principles that our country is based on. It's uniquely American, unlike, you know, I think it's unlike other countries at the time. The separation of religion and government is really a uniquely American principle.
Allison Gill is Vice President for Legal and Policy Issues at American Atheist. Both of these important reports are available online at atheist.org, and we will link to them from stateofbelief.com. Allison, it's great talking with you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.